Welcome back to More Than Tracy Turnblad, the podcast about fat representation in entertainment and media. My name is Abby Rose Morris, and today I'm interviewing Stephanie Lexis. Stephanie is an actress, singer, songwriter, comedian, and advocate for body positivity in theater. She is the founder of the Broadway Body Positivity Project, which you may have seen on Facebook, Instagram, social media, TikTok, or somewhere on the internet. And I am super excited to chat with her about how she got to founding the Broadway Body Positivity Project and about her life in general and her opinions on fat representation. So we've got a really great conversation coming up. First, exciting news. Dating question submissions for Kristen Maraccio, aka Dateology Coach, have been extended to this Friday. So you can now submit also at Kristen's website, which is dateologycoach.com. That way you can really write out your whole situation. You don't have to keep it to a TikTok comment or an Instagram comment or a little Instagram question ask box, because it's a lot more fun and interesting when we get the whole breadth of your situation. And of course, you can be anonymous, so no worries about like putting your personal details out there because no one will know your name. So speaking of dating, kind of, I want to talk to you today about a fat trope that I actually cannot believe I haven't discussed here. In fact, I was so sure that I had that I literally just had to go back through every single episode description and read what I talked about in the intro to see if I had already covered this. I have not, but I am going to now. So you may have seen I did a TikTok about this like a few months ago, and it does come up on the podcast pretty regularly. But today I want to do a little bit of a deep dive on the tragic fat girl. And I just think this is such a ubiquitous character, which as the demographic that I am of a white woman and a young white woman was always the main way that I saw myself represented on screen. And so I have a lot of beef with this trope. The tragic fat girl does tend to be one of the only places you see a younger fat character, at least a younger fat lead character or character that has an arc or a journey. So she is often in high school, but not always. There's like an older version of it too, but it's more like spinster cat lady vibes. I'm really talking about sweet, innocent, naive girl who's never kissed a boy, but like wants to more than anything else in the world and probably has a crush on the jock who will never notice her because she's fat. So the tragic fat girl is almost always young and almost always white. And she's afforded this level of sympathy and pity that we don't have for other fat characters. I think there is something about being a woman, about being a white woman, and about being a young white woman that makes us just so fucking sad when this character does not meet conventional beauty standards. Because as we know, the number one thing that like a woman must have, especially in Hollywood or whatever, is being desirable, beautiful, attractive, whatever. And particularly being those things in the eyes of men. And so without that, so much of any woman's value is like, or like her other attributes will never really count because they'll never make up for her failing in the most important area, right? And so we tend to feel a lot of pity for the tragic fat girls. They're written to be pitiable. And because they're written to be pitiable, they also serve as cautionary tales. This is what'll happen if you get fat. This is what your life will be like if you're fat. So to emphasize our pity for the tragic fat girl, she wants nothing more than to be the ingenue. And she's so close, right? She's young. She's white. She probably has a pretty face and long hair. She's other good qualities like she's smart. She's kind. She's a good friend. She's loyal. All that kind of stuff. She's very naive like an ingenue. But of course, what she is missing is the looks. So, of course, the tragic fat girl is always in love with an unattainable man. And she's always very sweet and naive about it, so she doesn't really realize it's never going to happen. Which also makes her a little bit dumb. So that's kind of adjacent to the stupid fat character trope. And it makes her kind of pathetic. So when I was growing up and I saw these tragic fat girls, I will tell you, I was so fucking mean about them. Like, I did not have any pity for them. I was like, you're just fucking stupid. Why wouldn't you see? No guy will like you. Get over it. Get over yourself. Men aren't the end all be all. So, like, my longstanding beef with the tragic fat girl is not just a fat phobia issue. It is a feminist issue because literally her entire life always revolves around a man. And I was not impressed by that as a child or now. Although now I'm a little more compassionate of, like, if you're in middle school and, like, everything around you is telling you that, like, men are the measure of your worth and, like, you think you'll never be able to have love. So, like, now I'm like, okay, I get it a little more. Young baby me, not so much. But I digress. Anyway, the tragic fat girl is so pitiable. And I think this also speaks to why she's almost always white. Because while being pitied feels very terrible and dehumanizing and infantilizing and yada yada, it also is kind of a privilege because people are empathizing with you and they actually believe you're enough of a person that you deserve pity. Fat women of color don't really get that, at least not in this teen comedy genre where you see so many tragic fat girls. They're never allowed to be weak or vulnerable or ingenue adjacent. They're never allowed to explore the pain of being fat. Instead, they have to be paragons of strength. I think it also says something about our just ability as a culture, like, to root for a white person versus a non-white person. And that's just, like, sort of a subconscious way this trope shows up. Now, there are a lot of characters who fall into this that I still love, like Martha Dunstock in Heathers or Beanie Feldstein's character in Lady Bird. But when this is all you see of a character that's your age, that's getting a significant storyline, it does hurt. It feels like shit. So while I don't fault any of the individual fat characters or even the creators of them, I do just want to point out, like, what this is telling us about the way we view fatness, women, and who is worthy of telling what story. The tragic fat girl is one of the biggest places we see fat people, and particularly fat women, and it's one of the main places we see actual storylines about being fat. And so this is where the most main fat characters tend to fall in terms of trope. There is a boy version of this. It's like more sweet, soft, fat boy adjacent, but they usually have a better arc of overcoming because, spoiler alert, men are allowed to have qualities besides beauty. I'm really going hard on this tonight, and can be valued for things other than their appearance, including in a romantic or sexual way. But yeah, I think that also speaks to the tragic fat girl being white is her being, like, a main character. So in that way, it is also a privilege to be a tragic fat girl because you're being pitied and you're getting more screen time. Like, you're having more of an arc, and so there's more opportunities for actors. And I don't know if this is true to this day, but, like, certainly 10 years ago, all of the tragic fat girls were white. So, like, there you have more opportunities for white actors. This is weirdly the trope that's afforded the most humanity, but it also, to me, is one of the most demeaning because it just serves to, like, drill into your head that, number one, no one will ever love you if you're fat, but number two, being desirable is, like, super important and not being desirable will make your life miserable. And, like, you can be a great person, you can have everything else in order, but if you're fat, you're still a failure. So those are the things this trope taught me, and so I decided to live my life in opposition to it, starting from when I was, like, 10 years old, because I just really did not want people to look at me with that pity in their eyes, and I didn't want them to think that I was stupid. Like, this trope basically taught me that being a fat girl and wanting anything meant you were destined to lose, and you just shouldn't if you didn't want to be, like, brutally publicly humiliated. Like, particularly and specifically in the love realm, but also just in general. So that made my adolescence real fun. But extremely drama-free, I will say. Anyway, I think that the tragic fat girl, like, definitely is a real thing that happens. In some ways, I do identify with her. I just feel like, why are we giving more airtime to these tired tropes? I'm bored. And even though, like, it is partially true to life, like, the reason that that is true to life is because we see that in media, so we internalize that that's what our life is going to be. And the thin people internalize that's what a fat person's life is, and so that's how you should treat them. And that media does not show fat people falling in love very often. It doesn't show fat people being the lead very often. It doesn't show fat people winning or getting what they want very often. It doesn't show fat people being smart very often. And it rarely shows fat people in the light of being beautiful. It can show a fat person who is beautiful, but it can't show a fat person who is beautiful in the context of the story very often. So out of all the fat tropes, I think this one was the most like personally damaging to me. And I'm sorry to like dive so deep into my trauma because this is also about to be a really heavy episode where we talk a lot about eating disorders, but it's just such a ubiquitous one. I just had to address it. And I think it's a really important one to examine. And I'm like just really interested in like media that subverts it. And I would like to write some things that subvert it. Because when you grow up thinking you're the tragic fat girl and then good things happen to you, or like you fall in love or something, that shit is cognitive dissonance. And maybe we'll talk more about that in our dating Q&A with Kristen. But for now, it is time for my interview with Stephanie Lexus. Places, actors, schmactors, and show folk. Dreading the Boards is a new podcast from fellow fat actresses Jen Ponton and Lillian Bussell. From AMC's Dietland to international burlesque sensation, these seasoned pros interview artists from Broadway, the silver screen, and beyond about their biggest actors' nightmares. For every artistic vision gone wrong, every audition that made your 32 bars shrivel up into 16, every post-apocalyptic production of Oklahoma, Jen and Lillian want to hear every last mortifying moment of the things we whisper to each other in the green room. Subscribe now and turn on a ghost light for legendary stories from Broadway alums like Wicked's Kathy Deitch, The Prom's Caitlin Kinnunen, and many, many more. Find Dreading the Boards wherever you find your podcasts and follow on Instagram at Dreading the Boards. So welcome, Stephanie.
Hello.
I'm super happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm really happy that we finally got to do this. I know this has been in the making for quite some time.
Yes, we've had some tech things, some scheduling things. So it goes. We're here now. Let's get to it. Yeah. So the first thing I want to know is how did you like get started in the arts? Like what was your very first introduction to it?
Okay. So when I was about 5 or 6 years old, my mom had some connection where she was able to take me to a dress rehearsal of the Nutcracker at the American Ballet Theater, because, you know, I grew up in Jersey. And even though it was a dress rehearsal, my mom dressed me up to the nines, and, you know, we went into the theater, and I remembered, you know, I was familiar with the Nutcracker. So I knew what was going to happen, but because it was a dress rehearsal, you know, they would have to, you know, stop and start, you know how it is.
Yeah.
And I was like stunned. I was seeing them break character and then talking to like, you know, the director and anyone else who was working behind stage. I was so fascinated that there was a process to all of this. That's the magic behind it is the process, and you know, and knowing that you there's ways to like, you know, improve, and that this took a lot of practice. And so from then I was just like just completely enamored, and I think that's when I was like, you know, bit by the bug, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's so funny that you say that, because my origin story is also the Nutcracker, and really? I completely relate to what you're saying about like, you know, when they drop character, that's where you see like, oh my gosh, this is so magical. Because it's like, in a way it's less magical if it's just the thing is happening, but it's more magical if it's like these people are transforming. Right. Yeah. My origin story was my parents are both, violinists, and they used to play in the pit of the Nutcracker up in Maine.
and we would go every Thanksgiving and they would play in the orchestra and I would get to sit like right behind the orchestra when I was like 3 or 4 and watch. And so I got kind of the same experience where I would like see the dress rehearsals and be a little behind the scenes.
Oh, that is so cute.
Yeah. I have all these pictures with every single ballerina.
Aw. I have another story that probably relates to the message of Broadway Body Positivity Project more. And that is one time I was at a children's museum. I was around the same age, I think. And there were these kids celebrating their birthday party. And I guess as part of their birthday package, they got to like play, like act out Cinderella. And I think the birthday girl got to be Cinderella. Her friends got to be like the stepsisters and stepmothers and whatnot. And the person who was like running the party was looking for someone to play Prince Charming. And no one was participating. She's like, anyone, you know, like anyone in for Prince Charming? And I'm thinking, well, I'm not a boy, but you know, I want to be in this show. This is a little play pretend show. And so I, you know, raised my hand and I put the slipper on her foot. And I couldn't believe that through playing pretend, I could be someone who's completely different from me. You know, yeah. I just had to use my imagination. And, you know, when kids are playing, they don't question those things. You know, and they just accepted that I was playing the prince. So I feel like that was also something that really has really shaped my views about theater and representation and stuff.
So on that note, when and how did you notice your size starting to show up in your like artistic life and pursuits?
I'm going to have to say during my high school years. So this is going to be a little bit of a personal story and maybe I should let everyone know there's should be a trigger warning. Okay. With eating disorders and weight. So when I was 11, I had gone through a few things in my life and I developed a binge eating disorder and it caused, you know, my weight to change. And when I got into high school, I was probably more like mid-size, but you know, back at the time people would criticize that. I mean, I guess people criticize that now too, but I would basically, I wasn't as slim as other people comparatively speaking. Mm-hmm. And, I noticed that I was getting less and less consideration for like ingenue roles or leading lady roles. And that, I found that really frustrating because like, I'm a soprano, you know, yeah. Those are like, you know, at least historically speaking, the ingenues are usually sopranos, you know? And, I was just very frustrated. And I even remember like with my own high school play, like we were doing Little Shop of Horrors and I wanted to audition for Audrey because someone thought I would be good. I don't actually think I'd be good in real life, but it was high school, so. But the girl who ended up getting the role said, there are three people in the running for Audrey. Me, the person who actually got it, and then there was a third person. The person who got it said that one of the people wouldn't get it because they were Indian, and that I wouldn't get it because I was fat.
Wow.
And ironically, the me and the other person who didn't get it, we were actually far more talented. I can say that because it's high school, you know, but like, and that was just high school, you know, but yeah. I felt like, yeah, I noticed I was just immediately out of the running for ingenue roles in more, you know, quote unquote professional productions. And that I was being relegated to like, you know, the more maternal roles.
That's so universal.
Yep.
So then after high school, where did you go and how did this continue to show up in your life?
So I attended Millikan University, originally for musical theater. And then I ended up getting cut 3 semesters later. I think I just found out yesterday that they don't do that anymore, which is great. And while I don't actually regret being cut, or redirected, as they called it. And I want to say the reason why I don't regret it is because I ended up getting to study music and realizing that I could write music. And also, I would have never created Broadway Body Positivity Project. But it was in my redirection that I realized that my body was a problem, even though no one actually explicitly said it. So I was cut from the program because my technique was, you know, at the time, my mental health was a total mess. And I remember I was like isolating myself a lot. And so I was just in a very dark place my freshman year. So of course it showed up in my work. And also I was just so, I was so preoccupied with wanting to stay in the program that I would freak out every time someone gave me a correction. And I just kind of like forgot why I loved what I was, I forgot about the love.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah, it was just more about like, you know, be the perfect specimen under their microscope. And right. To the point where I would just crash and burn all the time. So I understood that. However, then there was like a part two in the conversation they had with me. And this is where I realized it had something to do with the way I looked. So just for reference only, I was maybe about a size 12, 14. So I guess what would be described as small fat, maybe.
Yeah.
And they were saying that, you know, when it comes to, you know, junior and senior year, you start having these musical theater repertoire classes, you know, like where you just perform musical scenes. And they were saying they did not know how to cast me. Like they did not know what to do with me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, use your freaking imagination. You know, like I have this, honestly, I don't believe it's impossible to cast anybody in anything. I mean, nowadays I feel this way, but you know, they didn't feel that way. And I said, well, you know, I know I could play certain theater roles. And then the professor was like, all right, make a list right now of, tell me the roles you could play. And I thought about a role that I had played and thought I did very well. It was a Cinderella in Into the Woods. And then she replied, do you really think you can realistically play that role again? And I'm like, well, I mean, I have the essence of Cinderella in Into the Woods and I have the voice. So what gives? And the only like possible conclusion I could come to was that it had something to do with my body. And I just felt that it was further evident in productions that would occur throughout my college career. I remember this one particular production where the romantic lead was not much of a singer, not much of an actress, great dancer, but because they were pretty, quote unquote pretty, they got the part. And that was just so frustrating because I knew other people in our department who could have played that role, but they were more than a size 8.
Yeah. And to think that you were like a smaller fat person then. Someone who like a lot of times people in the plus size community might be like, well, you're not fat enough to be here.
Yeah. And the other thing is like when I was in college, I made it a goal every summer to come back thinner. And I would go on this diet and people would be like, ooh, you lost weight. Like my peers and I loved it. It was like, I reveled in it. I just loved, you know, people noticing that I lost weight. And then, and I loved it when my professors noticed. That same professor who cut me one time, you know, saw me. I had lost a lot of weight, you know, not by healthy means, of course. But I remember she was like, ooh, and like, in my head, I was like, to me, it was like almost like revenge. Like, ha ha, I lost the weight. Right. What are you gonna do now? You know, this is, you know, but.
So speaking of revenge, maybe now is a good time to talk about Insatiable, because I know you have feelings on that based on this experience and as someone who like struggles with binge eating disorder.
Yeah. So, okay. So I know this might be controversial, but I love Insatiable. I was actually just watching it again last night. I could understand why a lot of people, when they saw the trailer, I could understand why people would think, oh, this is fatphobic and stuff. But I personally relate to the main character of Patty Bladel, you know, not in the sense that I become a serial killer, but like I really actually felt, especially in the second season, that they really, really did an honest portrayal of binge eating disorder. I cried at some of these episodes. And also I actually recently found out that, I don't know if I'm saying her name correctly, Lauren Gussis, who created the series, she had an eating disorder and was bullied. So that was actually the reason why she created the series.
Oh.
Now, I know that a lot of people, I know a lot of like people in our community were frustrated with this. And I understand. I get it. Especially because she does wear a fat suit in the beginning. And I'm not a fan of fat suits at all. Although I guess my question is, I don't know. I'm wondering, I guess the only real solution they could have had was if they cast another actor to play Patty pre-weight loss.
Right. If this was, like, assuming this was the story they were going to tell. I think a lot of people's issues is with that this is the story they chose to tell. Because in the, like, first couple episodes even, and in, like, all the marketing for it, it seems like it's going to be so fat-phobic. And it is, because the character who's narrating it is. So I guess you have to have, like, a level of critical thinking and, like, understanding of satire to...
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I felt like that a lot of the things... And, like, I want to reiterate, I do not like fat suits. I do not approve of it at all. But as for the rest of the series, I felt like the things that people were criticizing about it were the very things they were satirizing. Like, our society's obsession with body image. I felt they were satirizing diet culture. The fat phobia in pageants, you know.
For sure.
And the whole concept of a revenge body. And I also felt like they were trying to make fun of the makeover trope that we see in, like, teen films. Like, oh, you know, you take off her glasses, she loses some pounds, and then she's a happily ever after. And then boom, you know, they don't have a happy ever after. Like, I remember reading an article where someone was criticizing one of the episodes being called Skinny is Magic. But the whole idea is that skinny isn't magic. And that when she, and then that when, even though she lost all this weight, her dreams did not come true. And I thought, I don't know, I actually thought they did a good job of shattering that idea. I understand it wasn't going to please everyone and ever. And I think if it's triggering, I totally understand that. Like, the show can be extremely triggering for anyone with an eating disorder. For me, it was actually like a release for me, you know, like seeing those scenes where there's this one scene where like she got so upset about something and then she takes her birthday cake and then she just shoves it in her mouth. Like to feel that fill of pain. Oh my God. How many times have I done that? And I remember like this other scene where she like in the second season, she's like eating some yogurt. She's like, oh yeah, that's healthy. And then she's like, okay, well I'll put some cereal on for some crunch. And then she's, you know, the reality is that she's restricting the amount of cereal she can put on. And I'm like, but she's trying to justify a little bit. And like, I know that those like mental gymnastics where it's like, you're trying to justify what you're doing, but then you realize, you know, you're restricting so much and that you end up binging.
Right.
You know, and I really see this all so much more clearly now that I'm in recovery. Last year I spent 2 months in residential treatment for eating disorder recovery. And I realize now that like my eating disorder and like all eating disorders are never actually about the food. It's about it's an unhealthy way basically to cope with your trauma.
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily now I have the coping skills I need. So, you know, cause for me, it's like, it's just whenever I have like these intense emotions, and in the past I wouldn't know how to deal with it other than to eat, you know, like if I was in a fight with someone or if I lost an opportunity, you know, food was always there. But now I realize, you know, I can still love food and appreciate what it does for me. And I can still eat what I like. You know, I think there's a big misunderstanding that like when it comes to recovery, you have to like, you know, eat a certain way, but really it's just about, we look at food as something neutral. So
yeah,
now I know how to handle those situations while still properly nourishing myself.
Yeah. I would love to hear a little bit more about your experience in treatment. Like, how was that as a fat person?
So I have to say, I am so thankful for the treatment that I got. Where I specifically went to Center for Discovery, and you know, they are weight inclusive. They're also like queer inclusive, which is cool. Definitely had its challenges. The staff was always so supportive of me. There was never, you know, no one was pressuring me to lose weight. I can't believe I'm actually saying this. I hope this is not a controversial thing to say, but like and this isn't true for everyone with binge eating disorder, but for me personally, my body did start losing weight naturally. Like, you know, no dieting, no, like, you know, vigorous exercise. It was just how my body was reacting to not binging anymore. But even the doctor was like, you know, like, don't try to, like, don't force it, you know? Yeah. Like if it, and like, you know, like, don't try to like make your body do what it's not supposed to do. Like, so I felt, so I really felt like I was, there was no, like, I never experienced any fat phobia from the staff, which is great.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And the thing is, the thing about treatment is that, like, you know, you eat what you like, you know, it's about, and how do we make it work? And the thing is, I was eating, we were all eating like a lot. We were eating 6 times a day, 3 meals and 3 snacks. And it didn't matter what size you were, you have, you got to eat, you know?
Yeah.
So, the other thing is with eating disorders, we, they help you face your fear foods. You know, like, I would see people eating cereal and I was thinking, oh, well, I can't eat cereal because that's sugar and that's not for fat people like me.
Right.
So then it became an assignment for me to try to face my fear food. And I did. I ended up eating cereal and I'm alive. So, yeah. And what I loved about Center for Discovery was that it was so mental health based, and yeah, we were in therapy like every day. And I learned that. That's where I learned that my eating disorder had nothing to do with food itself. It had to do with certain traumas I had gone through.
Yeah.
And I will say the biggest challenge that I faced when I was there was that I was the only person there with binge eating disorder. And so, and everyone else was kind of like on the other side of the spectrum. And the thing is, sometimes the behaviors of someone with an ED on one side of the spectrum could be very triggering to someone on the other side of the spectrum. You know, people, yeah, who are strict, you know, they don't want to think about food. You know, they want to have as little as possible. And here I am like, give me more food. Because that's what, yeah, my body was used to, you know. And so, you know, it was like I had to be mindful of it. But also I had, you know, I needed them to respect, you know, that, like, I'm on my journey and I'm here to rectify these things. But, yeah, you know, it's challenging, you know, for all of us to be having our own triggers, you know, and all wanting to heal but not being bothered by someone else's problems. It's messy, but I think we all learned something from each other.
Yeah.
But the, as far as like, the only thing that really bothered me was that, you know, we would have like some body image discussions, which is, I right, expected that. But you know, it was frustrating hearing everyone else there who was in a visibly smaller body talk about how they thought they were fat or how they felt fat or how they feared becoming fat. Whereas, yeah, I'm actually fat. But I had this most amazing therapist who really wanted to encourage me to stand up for myself as a fat person. And in one of our groups, I did talk about how, you know, how I actually live in a fat body. And I know that I was probably one of your biggest fears when I walked into this program, because I am the physical thing that you fear, you know, and that, you know, and I understand that your ED brain is telling you that you are fat. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, conditioning from society makes you feel that way too. But I, yeah, actually, I don't want to say I live with the consequences, but like I you know, I guess you could say like I faced, you know, systemic discrimination, I guess you would say.
Right.
Like, you know, like I said things like, you know, I'm someone's worst nightmare on a blind date. You know, I have to ask for a seatbelt extender on a plane. I have had doctors who just wanted to see me lose weight and not see me as a person. And I want you to understand, like, that you're not going through those things. And I want you to love yourselves, but also not fear this either.
Right.
I was really glad I got to say that before I left. And yeah, I just hope that all eating disorder recovery programs, you know, keep that in mind. You know, yeah, if me struggling with my binge eating disorder was triggering for restrictors, then please understand that people talking about their fat phobia is going to be triggering to me. So, you know, we just, yeah, need balance. But yeah, I'm really glad I did it though.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what, like, prompted you to start the Broadway Body Positivity Project?
Okay, so when I had gotten out of college, I originally did not focus on theater. I was like, I was not going to act. I wasn't going to do anything like that. I just wanted to become a singer-songwriter. And I was doing lots of open mics and stuff. And then my brother was dealing with a lot of medical issues that weren't even diagnosed yet. And it was really hard for all of us, especially for him. And
yeah.
I was also being harassed by several guys in the music industry.
Yikes.
Yeah, I had to quit the New York City open mic scene because it's a small scene, even though it's in a big city. And also, I just kind of like, you know, seeing my brother suffer so much, it was just, like I said, it was hard for me. And I kind of like disappeared from the arts altogether, you know, occasionally posting a video online. But then in like 2018, I was like, you know, look, I have roles that I really want to play. So let me put together like another weight loss plan to get that body that I want so I could play like a Disney princess or something. So I was on a family vacation / work because I am my brother's caregiver. But yeah, I had a lot of like free time on this vacation. I was just alone in my thoughts. Yeah. And I was thinking about how I was going to, you know, try to lose 50 pounds and how I was going to do it by eating very little carbohydrates and doing lots of exercise, you know, eat less, move more, you know, right? And I started thinking to myself, like, well, damn, you know, even if I lost all of this weight, what would this be proving? That the only way that I could play an ingenue, that someone that is supposed to be attractive, you know, likable, and worthy of love and romance, I have to be thin? And like, and I was thinking about like, you know, thinking about all the little kids that go to see a show and that, you know, who like look up to Broadway actors and try to find out how they made it. Like, what if they found out the only way I got to play these roles is if I lost weight? What would that tell those little kids?
Yeah.
You know? And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to do like a photo shoot or something where I, as a plus size performer, dress up as leading ladies and ingenues that I've been wanting to play my whole life and just normalize it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, ooh, you know, I should get some other people involved in this. And we'll have like a whole series of photos, you know, all, you know, different shapes, sizes, you know, races, like, oh, it'll be so great. And then I got some people together and I thought, okay, well, where am I going to share this? Am I going to put this on my Stephanie Lexus social media? I'm like, well, no, because this is bigger than me.
Yeah.
So it needs a platform. So then I created Broadway Body Positivity Project. And then I ended up launching it in 2019. And the funny thing is, we're still working on the photo project. Even though that was the only reason why I created the platform. But yeah, and then I realized, you know, I could promote this by, like, doing some other stuff. And now I realize, and then it just kind of took on a life of its own, and now it's gone to places I never thought it could.
That's so amazing. Do you have, like, long-term goals for the Broadway Body Positivity Project? Where do you see it going?
I was saying this to Ryan Donovan, actually, that my goal is for this to never have to need to exist anymore.
It's like Hinge. It works. If it works, you delete it.
Yeah. Like, in like 25 years, I want, you know, Generation Alpha and all the new incoming generations to be like, wait, body shaming was that? People did that? You know? Like,
yeah.
You know, I want to be a thing of the past, and then I could just focus on my art completely. But, you know, my goal is to continue working with college theater programs, because that's something that my team and I do now, because now I have a team. We're all alums of Millikan University. Because the reason why I didn't solely focus on sizism or fat phobia was because I started thinking about my peers who were like disabled little people, you know, BIPOC, etc., and how they were being overlooked on our campus.
For sure.
Which worked out great, because I realized that, you know, the historical body positivity movement was about standing up for all sorts of marginalized body types. So that ended up working out well. But yeah, my goal is that we will be working with top casting directors, which we actually are starting to do, and that we will be like working with, you know, like I said, like all the people in the upper echelons of the Broadway industry and you know, across the country.
Yeah.
And I actually, even though I've been interviewed by people in other countries, I keep my focus on American theater because it's what I know. I wouldn't feel comfortable, like, you know, because, like, everything I know, it's all informed by American culture. You know, like, I wouldn't, like, if someone in South Korea asked me to talk to them, I'd be like, well, I can't say to them the average dress size is a 16 because it's not, over there it isn't.
Yeah.
And also, there actually, I don't know if you know this, but there are a few different body positive theater organizations in other countries.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so there's Every Body on, is it Everybody on Stage?
Yes, I know them. I follow them on TikTok.
And then, this one person who interviewed me, she's from Liverpool, and she is creating All Bodies to, like, the number two, mm-hmm. All Bodies to the Stage, and she's focusing, like, on, like, West End theater.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and then I actually want to work with some people from other countries for them to develop their own version, you know, because they know their culture.
Yeah.
Better than I do, and I'll especially as a white woman, I don't want to go to like, you know, like I said, I don't want to go to like other countries and be like, this is how you do things, like it's just gonna feel a little
for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, and I just want to keep working with amazing people, and yeah.
So given that it's called Broadway Body Positivity Project, I know like body positivity is a term that is kind of hotly debated in some circles. Yeah. So I'm wondering, like, why did you choose to call it Broadway Body Positivity Project?
So I originally wanted to call it something else. I wanted to call it the Broadway Body Diversity Project. Mm-hmm. However, there is an organization that already exists called Broadway Diversity Project. And I wasn't going to be tacky and, you know, put out something with a very similar name. That's not cool. And I, you know, I really, you know, and I respect Broadway Diversity Project and all the amazing things they do. And I actually would love to work with them one day. So I thought, okay, well, I guess we could do body positivity instead. I definitely understand why a lot of people are maybe disenchanted with body positivity as it is today. Yeah. And because I guess the term would be, people in smaller bodies, especially in white smaller bodies, have been like, maybe I guess you could say we're co-opting the movement.
Yeah, or appropriating it.
Appropriating, yeah. And they were making it more about positive body image rather than body positivity, the social justice movement.
Yes.
You know, and I understand that a lot of like mainstream brands are trying to like capitalize off of what they think body positivity is, and it's like erasing the people that pioneered this movement, which were Black women who were fat, queer, disabled. And yeah, I definitely see why people feel that way. But at the same time, I want to keep the name because I want to honor those who pioneered this movement.
Yeah.
I want the roots to be reclaimed.
Yeah.
And that's why I really, you know, with February coming up, you know, it's Black History Month, and I really want to take this opportunity to remind everyone that body positivity is Black history. This page would not exist without the advocacy and activism of Black women who are like fat, disabled, etc.
Yeah.
You know, and non-binary and trans and queer. And the thing is, I always have to remind myself like that, you know, as a white woman, I always have to remind myself like, you know, that I probably do have a lot of privilege with running this account. You know, and that maybe I get more opportunities, because I am white. And so that's why I have to remind myself, like, you know, remember the roots, Stephanie, like, remember, this is, you know, and cause it's not fair that they're being erased.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also I want to say there's a really great TikTok, that Classy Fatty Babe made.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she talked about the difference between body positivity, positive body image, and body neutrality. And I think it's important that everyone sees it because I, you know, I hear a lot of people saying we're choosing body neutrality over body positivity. I'm like, you actually could have both. What they really mean to say is we're not worrying about having positive body image.
Yes.
You know, because the way she explained it was really great. She said, body neutrality and positive body image are how you view your own body. So yes. Either you see it, you're looking at it positively, or you're just respecting your body for what it does, but not having an opinion on it. But body positivity is about social justice for those in marginalized body types.
Yeah. It's a politic. It's not a feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. It's about fighting for equity, making sure that, you know, that their medical, that they're getting the medical treatment they deserve, that, you know, that they're being protected from violence, that they have the same rights as everyone else, you know? Yeah. So, but I understand how I could so easily see how that could be mixed up. And, you know, and then with people kind of like, you know, appropriating the movement, you know, I totally can see how people have twisted definitions. And
yeah.
And also doesn't help that people who are fat phobic are trying to redefine the term body positivity. Like, oh, you know, the real body positivity is, you know, making sure you move a lot and that you go on a diet.
Right.
You know, so that you're a tip top shape. Like you can't redefine history. You can't revise history.
Yes. I think that's such a fantastic distinction, and like you and Classy Fatty Babe have both articulated it so well. She's a mutual. Shout out if you're listening to this. I think you're awesome and I love your content.
Yeah, she articulated it like way better than I ever could. Like I was like, this is amazing.
We'll link the TikTok in the show notes so people can hear it. But I think that's like such a great distinction to make that like is going to make sense to a lot of people, because I love the idea of not giving up on body positivity. It seems like a lot of fat activists have at this point been like, well, and disability activists and activists like for diversity in general, it seems like a lot of folks have been like, well, body positivity has been appropriated. It's over. Moving on, let's find a better term. But I like the idea of like not giving up on it and instead clarifying what it actually is, because I also think it's such a great term because it is so inclusive, and like it has these roots with disabled people, with fat Black women that like are so necessary, and you can't have fat liberation without also having like that same advocacy for disabled people and for people of color. And for queer and trans people as well. So I really like it for that reason. And I love that sort of philosophy on it because it seems more hopeful.
Yeah. And I am so grateful that those people fought for this so that, you know, we can advocate for our rights, you know?
Yeah.
I try not to take that for granted.
Yeah. I would love to hear a little bit more about this like intersection with ableism and medical fat phobia. And I know you're a diabetic. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that's like, how has that like played into your activism, or has it at all?
Yeah. So I got diagnosed last May as a type 2 diabetic, and I kind of knew it was going to happen. And I did feel some shame because I do think there is an association with being, when people look at fat people, they assume that they are diabetic. And this actually happened to me where people would say, oh, but this isn't good for diabetics. I'm like, well, how do you know if I'm diabetic or not? You know?
Yeah.
But the reality is, and like, even my endocrinologist was like, you know, this probably was caused by the binge eating. I'm like, well, no duh. I was like, I used to drink like, at least like 50 to 100 ounces of Coke like daily, because it was what, again, it was what numbed the pain. You know, I still drink Coke today. I do it in a mindful way.
Yeah.
You know, and it like, it's not restricting. It's just like, okay, I had this, it satisfied me the way it needed to. Now I do what I got to do for the rest of the day, you know? But, you know, yeah, of course, of all the Coca-Cola I drank and the way I would consume, like, you know, an abnormal amount of sweets to like, again, to numb the pain and like, you know, give me that, I guess that high,
yeah.
Like, yeah, it didn't surprise me. But, the only thing is like, if I were to do like a show, whether it be TV, film, or even theater, I do have to eat every few hours to, you know, mm-hmm. keep my blood sugar steady. So I have yet to, you know, with this pandemic stuff, I haven't really been like auditioning for a bunch of stuff, but like, I don't know what that's going to be like. And I don't know if it's going to be respected. If people are just going to think, oh, well, just 'cause you're fat. Like, but like, you know, yeah. I just need people to see that it's a real medical condition.
And like, even if it is because you're fat, or if it's linked by the binge eating, like you still are deserving of like good care, exactly. respect, like every basic human decency thing exactly. that we could give you, you know?
Exactly. And you know what? The funny thing is, there are type 2 diabetics who are in smaller bodies.
Totally. And there are lots of fat people who aren't diabetic.
Exactly. And, like, you know, and I think a lot of people have, you know, make assumptions about, like, my blood pressure, too. And I'm like, I have amazing blood pressure. Always have.
Yeah.
And the thing is, even though I have been struggling with an eating disorder since I was 11, you know, I will always say that theater people do care about their health. So that means that anyone of any size in theater cares about their health, because you literally need to to survive in this industry, you know?
Yeah. Mental and physical.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we have to drink a lot of water. We have to get proper rest. You know, we have to recover our bodies after a performance. You know, there's people just, you know, just a lot of ignorance. I get a lot of ignorant comments, you know. I'll have to say, like, I think the most ignorant comment that I've seen on my Instagram as of late was that someone said that disabled people can't act.
What?
I know, the guy was not in theater or in the arts at all. And I was like, do you realize how stupid you sound? Like, that's the thing, is that a lot of people who don't know anything about the craft of performing think they're experts anyway. And they're not.
Right. It's like they think that you have to be able to change your body. So if you are, as a disabled person, cannot change your body to be abled, then you're not really an actor? Is that the logic there? Like, what?
I don't know. I think they have a very limited... I think they don't really understand what the spectrum of disability.
Yes.
Like, they might... Maybe they're thinking of someone... In their experience, they've met people. I don't know. I have no idea, honestly.
That's so weird.
I don't want to understand their logic, because it was ridiculous.
That's fair. Yeah. So, like, back to college real quick. I know that one of the things that you have done is advocating against weigh-ins in college programs. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
Yeah. I have very strong feelings about that. So, as far as I know, I think it's, like, a maximum of 2 schools, I think, that do it. But the fact that even one school is doing it is just completely unethical. So there is one particular school that weighs their dance majors. They used to weigh their theater majors, but they did that department recently made that no longer a requirement. But for dance majors at Oklahoma City University's Ann Lacey School of Dance and Entertainment, they weigh their students every semester. They are given a goal weight. And
oh my God.
They are. And I've actually interviewed, like... I've interviewed, like, a handful of alums. No current students, because they live in fear. A lot of them were, like, fearful what would happen.
Oh, my God. That's horrifying.
Even the alums were like, don't tell anyone that I did this interview. And I'm like, you're an alum. What do you have to worry about? But, like, no, I respect that completely. Like, you know. But I interviewed people who graduated from the past, like, 20 years. And they all had the same story. Like, you know, you have to make weight. You have to be within 5 pounds of your goal weight. And if you don't, your ballet grade or one of your dance class grades will drop. And what really disturbed me was these 2 facts. One, that for the dance majors, if they didn't meet their goal weight by the time they graduated, they couldn't graduate. Or they at least couldn't graduate in that program. But I want to double check on that. But also, just the disordered eating behaviors that people would engage in order to make weight. So, like, they'll be told, like, I guess around, like, the week of that weigh-ins are this week. And so these are the following things that people do: barely eat, starve, laxatives, spending hours on the elliptical because they're not supposed to lift weights. I think some people might have used cocaine.
Oh my God.
Some people would eat cotton balls, water cuts. Some people wouldn't drink water at all, or they would, like, spit out water. I don't know. It was a weird thing. But after weigh-ins were over, everyone would go out and just binge on everything they'd eat. Like, all of, like, you know, the so-called quote unquote bad foods. And they would just stuff their faces. Yeah. This has been confirmed by so many people who've gone to Oklahoma City University. And I'm not okay with that. And I am going to do something about it. And I'm not going to say exactly what yet, but I do have a plan. And I don't care if they know that, because they do actually follow me on Instagram.
Yeah.
And probably because so many people have tagged them in posts that I've made about their practices. And I don't care. I'm going to call it out.
Yeah, as you should.
Yeah. And let me just say, if things work out the way I want it's not going to last long, the way ends. Also, you know, just like with many other theater schools, you know, those who have like admitted they had eating disorders, they might have been referred to people off campus for help, but there have been some who have encouraged eating disorders in their students there. One person I spoke to who transferred out said that they were, you know, they were struggling with, like, I guess, anorexic type behaviors. And they said, well, it's working, or like, you're doing a great job. Well,
yeah,
you just encourage them to keep restricting.
Right.
Yeah. And so, that's just not a life to live. And, you know, I've consulted a dance dietitian about this. To the Point Nutrition is her name, Point, like Point Shoes with an E.
Yeah.
I've spoken to a therapist who works in the theater industry. And I even spoke to a doctor who had a student in the program. And they all just had nothing but critical things to say.
Yeah.
About this. So if you're listening in Lacey School of Dance and Entertainment... I'm not afraid. I'm gonna do something about this. Yeah. I'm gonna do something, because it's created so much trauma in their alums.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little more about, like, representations, fat characters that you've seen that have, like, impacted you as you've grown up and, like, to this day.
So I was thinking about this. I don't really know if I do. I mean, like,
insatiable, I guess.
Well, I guess, but like, I'm thinking about like when I was a kid, you know, because when I was a kid, I was not always technically, I wasn't always considered fat. So I guess I wasn't thinking about my fat identity.
It's so funny. When I was a kid, I got fat when I was about 10, just like puberty, like boom, hit me like a train. All of a sudden I was fat. And PCOS life.
Oh, yeah, same here. PCOS.
Yeah. But I remember, like, when I got fat, like, something shifted. It was like lightning struck. And suddenly I noticed every fat character, and I was deeply uncomfortable at fat jokes when I never had been before. Like, it happened overnight. It was crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, because we mentioned Insatiable with fat suits, I was thinking about a movie and a TV show where – they had fat suits, and then the characters got thin, and you see how the characters have changed.
Yeah.
There was I think it's called Just Friends with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, like, he has a fat suit, and he's like, he's a sweet guy, and then he becomes a total jerk when he loses the weight. And you kind of see that also with a New Girl, with Schmidt.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. Now, again, I don't like fat suits, but I guess the point they were trying to illustrate is that these people became arrogant after losing weight, and sometimes that does happen.
Yeah.
And I think in real life, it is frustrating when people who were formerly fat and do lose weight end up being very fat phobic towards other people, even though they've known what it was like.
You know what's so funny about that particular trope is that I definitely do think, like, a degree of it happens in real life because of fat phobia, but it feels like when it's portrayed in movies, the argument is pro-fat in this weird way that's also fat phobic, where they're emphasizing all the other good qualities and, like, saying, like, oh, what a tragedy this person was fat because they had, like, every good quality, but still no one would like them. And there's a fantastic Ask Polly advice column, if you guys – don't read Ask Polly by Heather Havrileski. It's fucking amazing. Will change your life. It was an advice column I want to say The Cut, and now it's a newsletter. But she did this one, which I've had bookmarked on my computer for literally years, about this girl who was, like, one of my best friends was fat and I never liked him. And now he got thin and I want him, but he doesn't want me. And so she like basically is like, you are shallow. Here is why. No wonder your friend doesn't feel safe around you. It's so good. It's literally a brutal roast. And wow. I highly recommend reading it. I'll link it in the show notes.
And the other thing that, well, that is frustrating about the trope is that usually it's the character is extra comedic when they're in the fat suit.
Yeah.
Like, oh, look at me and my double chin. Hoo-hoo-hoo. Like, ugh.
Yeah, and like, I love food so much.
Yeah. I guess in a way that's why I wasn't so bothered by Insatiable, the fat suit, because it was only, I think, in one episode, and they were trying to portray how cruel people were. I never felt it was for comedic effect. But yeah, I still understand if people are frustrated with that. I totally get it. Like,
I mean, Insatiable, like, they almost did it in a good way, but the fact that they had, like, her, like, when she had to have her jaw wired shut, it was because she literally, like, fought a homeless guy for a candy bar. Like, like, insane. Like, so, I mean, clearly she was a bad person before and after the weight loss, but it was just, like, it just felt a little bit, like, too gimmicky and fat phobic for me. And I think there are a lot of movies that go wrong when they're trying to be like, little food though. Like, I think Euphoria is a really good example. I talked about that a couple podcast episodes ago where it's like the character of Kat, I think, is so like real and true to a lot of people's experience in a larger body. But the fact that they had to have the joke of her getting fat by drinking like 70 like pina coladas in like a 3-day vacation or something. Yeah, they have to have the food joke in there.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, there's not enough portrayals of binge eating disorder in the media for people really to get, you know, and you know, I feel like with portrayals of like anorexia, you know, people have had time to like work on that and get it right. Although we've yet to see someone in a bigger size portray someone with anorexic, because you could be any size and be anorexic. But I was going to say, like, I feel like they've been working on it so long that they've figured out what works and what doesn't work. And there's this one show that's on Netflix called Never Have I Ever.
I love Never Have I Ever.
Yeah. Although there's fat phobia in that show too, through the character Eric.
Oh yes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Cause that was the one thing that separated that could, if they just got rid of that fat phobia, the show could have been perfect. Like, I would give it 100%. But I have to dock a few points. But like, what I liked was that for the anorexia portrayal, that it was, you know, like it was an Indian Muslim girl. We always see like slim white girls in those roles. So I thought that was really cool to see that. But now I'm thinking about it. I was so upset about, I think his name is Eric, he's the fat character that is like the butt of, you know, fat phobia jokes. Like, he like drops his candy and he's like, oh, my those are where I get my vitamins. Like, oh, come on, you're doing everything else right. So maybe, I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah,
maybe next season will be different.
Yeah, I want to talk also about, like, I know you have opinions on Tracy Turnblad, and so like, let's talk about fat representation on Broadway a little bit and the lack there.
Did you ever see, I once made a post that said every time someone brings up Tracy Turnblad in a conversation about fat representation, like an angel loses its wings.
I love that.
I swear, every time, someone always brings up Hairspray.
They're like, well, there's this one character, and so fat phobia is not real and is fixed.
Yeah. And I feel like Tracy has kind of become like the patron saint of like fat girls in musical theater.
Yeah, that's hence the title. I made this title out of being incredibly fed up by how many people were telling me to play Tracy and nothing else. Nothing else age appropriate.
Yeah. Because like, not all of us are Tracys. Like, you know, like,
not all of us are white, not all of us are able-bodied, like, exactly. Not all of us are cute and small and like eternally optimistic.
Exactly. And the thing is, like, as far as like race goes, it's like, you know, white women we get Tracy, you know, black women get Effie White, and then what about Asian fat women? What about Latinx fat women? And what about Pacific Islander, or you know, like anyone of any other, or like Manasa? Like, what do they get? But yeah, and also the thing is, I'm very anti-typecasting. I believe we should look at someone's essence rather than type, because type is so, it fixates on appearance. It just proportionally focuses on appearance. Because yeah, if I walk into an audition, someone may see my body and say, "Oh, you're an Ursula," but they hear me sing and watch me act, I'm an Ariel.
Yeah.
So, and like for you, like, I think you would be a great Tracy, because I think you have the essence of Tracy.
Thank you. I appreciate the endorsement. Cast me.
Yes. Cast me. Yeah. If they ever have to recast the national tour, you know, put yourself out
I'm
there.
I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm ready. Let's go. I got the wig.
Really? Oh, yeah.
No, it's from my solo show. I started wearing the wig.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, fun fact. I was actually at the East Coast premiere of Hairspray, the movie.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah. I was like this close. I was like so close to like Zac Efron and Queen Latifah. Our hands touched when she was walking the red carpet.
Wow.
I haven't washed my hands since. That was a long time ago. But yeah. I think I've kind of become disenchanted with musical theater, and have become more in favor of like TV and film, because we're seeing more projects with body diversity in it. You know, and I understand that's also mm-hmm. easier to do, because it takes a long time to put together a musical. You know, there's the writing, there's the workshopping, the tryouts. It takes years and years. Whereas, you know, you could take you only a few months just to write a show for TV, you know, or film.
Still, though, there's like definitely a trend of taking a character who's canonically or historically fat, and in the musical version, even more so than in TV film, where it also does happen, like casting a thin actor to play them.
Yes, I made a TikTok about that a while ago, and I think I need to repost it, because I don't think enough people saw it. Because I know it might ruffle some feathers, because I don't want to offend the people who played the roles, but
and you don't have to call it the specific person, just the fact that it happened. You know, like, I would never hold it against each actor necessarily. We're all trying to get by in this cruel world, and people can learn too. So, like, what if that's something that happened years ago and now they've realized the error of their ways, you know?
Yeah, I get that. And I do think, you know, and like for some of them, it was a while ago, but I'm not going to say the names, but I'll say the productions. The original Broadway production of Little Mermaid, Ursula, mm-hmm. was portrayed by a slim actress who I'm a big fan of, but they did put her in a fat suit to play Ursula.
So unnecessary. There's so many great fat actresses who'd be so good for it.
It's ridiculous just how many people I could have seen in that role, you know?
Yeah. And also, like, drag queens and trans women get completely ignored for it, too, when that's, like, the roots of the character, which makes me
exactly.
so
mad. Exactly. Because Divine was the inspiration. Yeah. So that just such a missed opportunity for, you know, for trans, non-binary, and plus-size women and femmes, you know, and also the original cast of Anastasia, and in the national tour, Vlad is always cast as Slim, even though he literally sings in the script, "I may have gotten fatter," but
fatter than what, Vlad?
And then also in the national tour of Mean Girls, I don't know if it was the original national tour, but Damien was Slim.
Yeah. I also want to add Elder Cunningham, because in the lyric, it's "listen to that fat white guy" in Hasadiga Iboye. And when I saw it with Ben Platt twice, they changed it to "listen to that weird white guy."
Not cool.
So you fucked up the internal rhyme and you eliminated an opportunity to cast a fat actor. Yeah, that's another big one. Rose and Dogfight is a big one. Nadia and Bear, which we've gotten the whole origin story of her becoming skinny. If you want to hear that one, you should listen to the two-part finale of our last season. It's episodes 21 and 22.
My gosh.
Yeah, because Katrina Rose was there while it was being changed, and she like really spilled the tea on exactly why it happened. Yeah, definitely. If you're listening to this and you're interested and you're a big theater nerd who loves Bear, go check that out.
Oh my gosh. I also am frustrated with the way people are cast in Waitress. I love Waitress. I love Sarah Bareilles. I have her physical CDs. I've seen her in concert. I think I love her, but I am bothered by the casting that, you know, Dawn, the meek character, is always very slim and petite.
Yeah.
Becky, you know, the sassy, brassy character who doesn't get, like, who doesn't have a happy ending and, you know, and has to have all of this, like, wisdom from her horrible experiences.
She's also very, like, sexual.
Yeah, yeah. She's always portrayed as, usually as a BIPOC plus size, BIPOC plus size actress. And then Jenna is somewhere in the middle. I mean, she's slim, but she's not as slim as, like, the meek character, you know? Right. So it's, like, just because someone's meek doesn't mean they're small, yeah. You know? And, you know, people like Jenna, there are women of various sizes and shapes that get abused by their husbands.
100%.
And fall in love with other people. And then also it's just frustrating to see so many talented, BIPOC performers, especially Black performers, only getting to play Becky. I mean, we have seen some Black representation in Dawn and Jenna recently.
And, you know, Waitress is doing better with that than a lot of shows are.
That's true.
But I completely agree. As a Dawn and, I guess, the body of a Becky, like, I so identify with Dawn. I feel like I'm a Dawn through and through. I just happen to be fat. Yeah.
I could see it was a Dawn, for sure.
Thank you.
But yeah, it's like, you know, I remember I was actually doing a podcast with someone else, and they were talking about Charity Angel Dawson being in Waitress and how, like, they thought that was so great that, like, someone of her body type was in the show. But I'm like, yeah, but she's playing Becky.
Right. She's playing, like, the most stereotypical of, and it's that weird thing where, like, the stereotypes of fat womanhood and Black womanhood, like, really overlap. So it's like, she's just embodying, like, all of the stereotypes.
Yeah. And the thing is, was she amazing as Becky? Absolutely. She's stunning. But I think I would love to see, you know, someone like Charity do more than those kind of stereotype roles, because they're so amazing. They deserve to play someone who is romantic and sweet and delicate, yearning, those kinds of things. Which is actually why I was so happy to see Jade Jones get cast as Belle in Olney Theater Center's production of Beauty and the Beast, because Jade got to embody all those things that we never get to see Black women and femmes play. And that's one of the reasons why, like, I'm also not so concerned about making it on Broadway, because amazing theater is being made everywhere.
Totally. That was so encouraging that happened at a regional house. I've always thought of regional theaters as, like, more fatphobic and more, like, formulaic. Mm. But it was so great to, like, see a regional theater truly doing something that would not normally, like, happen in, quote, traditional, end quote, casting. So that actually brings me to my next question for you, which is a segment called Cast Me, Cowards, where you tell me one role that you would like to play but would not be, quote, traditionally, end quote, cast in.
Ooh, so there are three roles I want to play, and I would tell you. However, I'm going to be doing those exact three roles in the photo and video shoot.
Okay, so you guys will just have to check back to find out.
Yeah, but let me think of another role.
You can take a sec to think of it, and you can even do one for someone else, too.
Dream role for someone else. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, it's a very flexible one, because not everyone on this podcast is an actor, but I still make you pretend to be a casting director for 1 minute.
What is, like, what are musicals? It doesn't have
to be in a musical, either. It could be anything.
Oh, it could be a play. This is for someone else. Someone thought it would be great to see Bonnie Milligan as Audrey in Little Shop.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I think Audrey's such a freaking great role.
Yeah. Also, this is an actress I interviewed. Her name is Ebony Strong. And she played Elle Woods in Woodstock Arts Theater's production of Legally Blonde. And I was saying to her that I would love to see her as Elsa.
Oh, cool.
And, yeah.
I love that. I love that. No reason why Elsa can't be a fat person or a Black person. None.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so my final question is, what do you wish people would do to combat fat phobia in the arts? Because I think we all know, like, what you're doing, and what you're doing is amazing. So, like, what can your average layperson or industry person be doing themselves?
Okay, two easy things. If you are, whether you're an actor, director, casting director, you know, make all theater spaces diet talk, body talk free zones. Just don't talk about how you want to go on a diet, how someone else should go on a diet. Don't complain about your body. Don't talk about someone else's body. It's just not, to me, it's, you know what? it's inappropriate work talk. It's because you're at work.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, there are just certain things you don't talk about in the workplace, and that should be one of those things. Yeah. You know? And then also the other thing is, if you are privileged in any way, whether you're slim, non-disabled, white, cis, you know, cis-hetero, you know, stand up for other people. Be an ally for those who are not, you know, and help open doors for them. Do you have an agent? Like, let them know about your amazing friend who is marginalized in some way and is not getting the recognition they deserve. If you're working with a theater company and they're looking for fresh new faces, recommend those people, you know? Yeah. You know, you have so much power, like, to make that change, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you're the person they're going to listen to the most, you know, sadly, at this point right. in time, you know? So
yeah, but use good. The power for good. Yes.
Yeah. And that's actually something I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create a database of performers that are marginalized in some way and then, you know, and then get them to perform in front of an agent or casting director and get like that. Personalized feedback. And then also share their frustrations in the industry with these people. And I'm only choosing people who understand.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I've been talking to like an agent and a casting director, and I'm going to see if this Broadway producer I know would also be interested. Yeah, just stick up for those who don't have their voices amplified, even though they deserve to be.
I love that. All right, so last thing, is there anything you have that you want to plug, and where can we follow you on social media?
Yeah, so just follow me on, it's the same same handle everywhere. It's just Broadway Bopo, so Broadway and then BOPO, because Bopo is standing for body positivity. So yes. Yeah, follow me there.
I love it. It's so catchy.
Yeah. So yeah, just stay tuned because I'm hoping to do the photo video shoot this year, finally.
Yay. I'm sorry if it was delayed by COVID. That sucks. But I'm so excited to see it and finally find out what your number 1 through 3 dream roles are.
Ooh, it's going to be good.
So thank you so, so much for coming on. You're awesome. I am so excited for everything that you've got going on. And I can't wait to see where the Broadway Body Positivity Project goes.
Me too. Because I don't know sometimes. Sometimes the anxiety, the imposter syndrome sets in and I'm like, I can't do this.
Oh, I can completely relate, but you're doing amazing things and so much has already happened and people are becoming so much more aware of this. So like, thank you so much for that activism.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. This was a really, really good interview, I felt.
Oh, I love that. I felt so too. Well, have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to More Than Tracy Turnblad. If you liked it, hit subscribe and leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts. That would be awesome. Also, follow us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, all at More Than Tracy T. And just tell your friends. Word of mouth is great, too. You can find more information at morethantracyturnblad.com.